good day, good night. Welcome to World Cup Today. Coming up soon, June 7th, right now today, and it starts in 7 days. 7 days till Russia takes on Saudi Arabia. Dwayne Rollins with myself, Kevin Laramie. Thanks for listening. A lot of you are listening. A lot of increases in listeners over the last few days, so we thank you very much for your listen. You can subscribe to us anywhere you get your podcast. Look for World Cup Today, Soccer Today, or the Sports Podcasting Network, and you can find live videos, like right now, at youtube.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Good morning, Dwayne.
Good morning, Kevin. Do you know what happens tonight?
I see how you're dressed again, Capitals. So I guess the Capitals are playing tonight.
Yeah, they're playing a game that they could win the Stanley Cup. They're playing a game tonight that they could win the Stanley Cup in. Oh my God. Sorry. I'll stop there, but oh my God.
All right.
Oh my God.
I'm doing well too. last night. Oh, yeah. I know you don't care. It's all about the Stanley Cup, but we're going to talk about England today. England's group G. I don't know why I wrote group F again here, but it's group G. So let me change that right now. But Group G, Dwayne, England, Tunisia, Belgium, and Panama. But before we talk about Group G, last night had the pleasure to cover round one of the Canadian Championship. It was a historical night. Oakville Blue Devil were in Laval to play Blainville. I know it doesn't make much sense, and the return leg is in Vaughan, not in Oakville. Fine, okay? But it was kind of fun. Of course, it's not the same level of organization and crowd support and soccer as round three or round two would be, but it's still a very important step in the Voyagers Cup, which for our international listeners that are just discovering us, Voyagers Cup is the name of the trophy that is awarded to the Canadian Championship. It was created by Dwayne and a bunch of his friends and colleagues and Voyagers in the early parts of 2000s with giving the trophy to the best Canadian team, and it has evolved from then. And now it will truly become some sort of an open tournament in the next few years. But this year is another step towards that with two quote-unquote semi-pro, the D3, Division 3 soccer in Canada, making it in this competition for the first time.
No, precisely. And yeah, the Voyagers Cup was created by supporters back in the early 2000s, as you say, by $10, $5, $50 donations here and there. So the fact that this has been opened up to the level that we're talking about now is really rewarding and awesome to see for those of us that have been around for a long time. So, the current champions are TFC, Montreal Impact have won this thing massive times. There's never been a champion other than the MLS teams, but it's nice to see, Kevin. And how was the experience last night?
Well, outside of the makeshift press conference that I built myself, it was really fun. The game itself, the support, and you can go to my Twitter feed to find the press conferences and images from the game, and some pyrotechnics, some pyros were lit last night, and there's going to be fine. And that's maybe the sad part of last night's game is the atmosphere was great. A lot of people enjoyed too the show that the supporters put on. And to be fair here, they're not necessarily all AS Blainville supporters. Let's just say that the Montreal Impact supporters group got together, sent a delegation to Laval, and represented our province this way. But yeah, so there will be fine to AS Blainville. Now, who pays the fine is something else. We know the budget of AS Blainville is very, very limited, and even just the travel to Oakville and just the game in Laval needed the help of the Federation Soccer Quebec and the Canadian Soccer Association, which is a case in big tournament too. The tournament itself, like the FA, does help smaller teams when they're further than they are usually in the FA Cup and get a bonus money after each round to help them with travel and everything. That will be necessary here too, eventually. But just to go on the bigger scale of the Voyagers Cup, Dwayne, I do feel the day is maybe 5 years, 6 years away where a Canadian Premier League team makes it pretty far and maybe into the final and maybe challenge an MLS team for the trophy.
No, for sure. And look, if you want to hear our Canadian Premier League thoughts in detail, you can always subscribe by our Patreon for $2 a month. But to talk about it here quickly, I absolutely think that will be the greatest thing that ever happens to this competition is when Canadian Premier League team lines up against the Whitecaps, the Impact, TFC, whoever it is, and takes one of them down. That will be the moment that that league and its supporters will come to life. This tournament is, we've needed this tournament for a long time. There's a reason the supporters stood up and paid their own money to make this trophy happen 20 years ago or 15 years ago, because it's needed. And it really does warm the heart and represent everything that's good about this game and what we love about it. I'm speechless, Kevin. I'm so happy this happened last night, and I'm happy you were there.
Yep, and the second leg is next Wednesday in Oakville. By the way, the result of last night's match was 2-1 for Blainville, with the winning goal from former Montreal Impact player Pierre-Rudolph Maillard. And by the way, you can get, and the score for Oakville was Anthony Novak, and you can hear both goal scorer on my Twitter feed in the press conferences that I broadcasted last night. Now, it's time to talk about Group G. Yeah, a little bit of Van Halen. Panama's in the group. Come on, I had to do it. I had to do it at least once. But for copyrights, I'm going to stop it right now. So, group.
10 seconds. Yeah, 10 seconds.
10 seconds. Fair use. Group G. Belgium, England, Tunisia, and Panama. Dwayne, I love the composition of this group. I love how this group is set up and how the schedule is set up too. Because I've played this group about 28 different times on FIFA 18 World Cup, okay? And every single time it's very similar what happens. You play against Tunisia? Hey, all right, I get a win. You play against Panama? All right, Alberto Quintero's out. He's going to miss the entire World Cup, their best player. So you get a win there. All right, Belgium and England, both on 2 wins, facing each other with basically just the win of Group G in the balance, both already being qualified for the knockout stage. That's how I see this group. That's how I've seen it play out about 20 times on my console.
It's hard to argue against that. And it's hard to argue that Belgium doesn't win that game either, because Belgium is, we talked about sleepers the other day, and I said that Croatia was my sleeper pick for the entire World Cup, but Belgium, I don't know, are they a sleeper at this point? We've known about them for a while.
They're not a favorite, but they're a contender, right? I would go in maybe three categories here. You have like your favorites, so that would be France, Brazil, Germany, maybe another one, or maybe Argentina, but, and then you have your contenders. Maybe I'll put Argentina in the contenders with Belgium, with Portugal, maybe in England, and then you have the upsets or the underdogs or the dark horses.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, yeah. No, they're very good. This is for sure a top two, then bottom two kind of group. It's hard to see Panama, especially now with the injury news, doing much in this. Will they get a point? I mean, Panama is Canada in 1986 right here. Like, they're just happy to be there. They're going to make up the numbers, and that's fine, and that's amazing that they did get in. But and I don't know anyone in this entire world that really knows very much about Tunisia other than Tunisians. So it is difficult to really articulate or handicap this group in any other way.
The good part for Tunisia is the Ramadan will finish before the beginning of the World Cup, or just at the beginning. So they're okay. One of the rare countries that actually do respect Ramadan during their training up into the World Cup. And the way the World Cup falls, it's always close to Ramadan. And for Tunisia, we've seen their players pull off a few impressive feats of getting injured at exactly the time where the sun goes down, like the goalkeeper a few days ago, and then the entire team goes on the bench to drink water and have a little snack. I thought that was kind of cute.
Jesus. I actually worked a League One Ontario game a couple of years ago where the assistant referee was a Ramadan follower, and he didn't have a single drink of water when it was 35 degrees Celsius the entire day. So good for them. But anyway, it's...
Oh, go ahead. I'm just agreeing.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I was mixed up there. No, but let's talk about England a little bit here, because England is the country that a lot of people that are listening to us will probably be supporting and probably be regretfully supporting. I like this England team, but I don't want to say it out loud. I just did. I know, but I don't want to say it out loud, because saying you like England is akin to saying, I don't know.
Because if you agree that you like them, people believe you think they're going to win it. That's not what we're saying right now. Are we saying this group has the potential eventually to win the World Cup? Yeah, probably. Yeah, if you look at Harry Kane, Dele Alli, and upcoming, and if you look at the players they left off too, it actually has a, don't want to say the I word, like it doesn't have an identity yet, but it has the potential of having an identity on the field. Dele Alli, Harry Kane together, just that connection, just that chemistry, and you build around that, you might have something here.
Well, England hasn't had a player of the quality of Kane probably since the 90s. It's 1990, yeah. Probably. Like, it's Rooney, been a long time.
Rooney was a name, and the name, not just because he was the best at this point, but because there was nobody else better, maybe. And Harry Kane is totally a different type of player than Wayne Rooney is. Harry Kane's ceiling is, well, maybe twice as high as Rooney ever was, just because of work ethic mixed with talent, which always was a trouble for Rooney.
Mm. I would say that if England would it takes over Wales, that then I actually think this team could go very deep in this tournament, if you follow what I'm saying there.
So
but
if
no.
you say Gareth Bale playing for, basically, because Wales is basically Gareth Bale, and like the coach.
Team GB would be better, but this is rare that you say that, and I'm not abdicating for that, English listeners. But nonetheless, no, as I say, I think back, and I've watched England pretty closely since the late 80s, and I can't remember a player like Kane that really makes you think that he could take the team in his back and you know, overcome. It just doesn't, to me. I've never experienced a World Cup, Kevin, where England is as less propped up as they are right now. There's a lot. Everyone's just a joke. England, they're going to lose. England, they're going to lose. And I look at this team and go, this is exactly when a team that is used to, yep. when you're used to just always going to lose, when everyone says they're going to lose and they stop believing, that's exactly when they start to win.
Remember 1990? Wasn't it a bit of the same feeling? I was 6 years old. I don't know. So I was playing soccer, actually, at that point. And I was playing for FC Boisbriand, one of the ancestors of Aris Blainville, who were in the Canadian Championship last night, just to tie everything together. But this England squad, the feeling of it, there's no expectations. I don't know if it's the right word, but there's no expectation of putting a second star above the logo right now. Even though the players have said, we have to go into this tournament with the mentality and the belief that we can win, no one expects England to win. And I think that's a bit the difference. A lot of time, I'm not going to put BBC in there, but ITV, Sky Sports, all those together usually say, look, England needs to win the World Cup because it sells papers and a lot of people want to listen to this. And then they overhype it and people don't dissect the team and analyze it and handicap it the proper way, and you go into the World Cup and England gets out, doesn't get out of the group stage, and it's a big controversy. Right now, England did that last time around. They did not get out of the group stage. So the expectations are nil, void. So they actually have a shot of beating expectations and having a successful World Cup. Does it mean they win the World Cup? No. Does it mean they win the group? No. Does it mean they maybe find a way out of the group by winning the first two games and maybe drawing Belgium or winning against Belgium or even losing? It doesn't matter at that point. Then you find yourself in a round of 16. If you're second, you might have a tough opponent, but you get a good result. You find yourself in the quarters. It's a success at that point.
No, for sure. The quarters for England would be a massive success if they were. Look, in 1990, they still talk about the team. They made the semifinals, right? That is considered an incredible accomplishment for the English team. I think most England fans have come around to the point that they understand where this team really stands in the world's pecking order, which is likely, you know, in the top 20, but not the top 10. It's still a good team, and it's still a team worth watching. In terms of the English press, my God, no. Like, just don't read it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, all they're doing is telling you how bad Raheem Sterling is, and we all kind of know why they're saying that. So that's, you know, what it is.
They're saying this because he got a tattoo of a gun, and they believe, oh, yeah, he's pro-gun. No, it's the exact opposite. It's to remind himself that he already has one, so he doesn't need to get any other gun than just himself. Anyways, people just want to read between the lines, whatever they want. But to continue with England for a second, we've talked about England a few weeks ago in kind of like of our road to World Cup today when we were doing some practice rounds. England has an interesting lineup, not choosing just stars and not choosing names of the past and not being afraid to use young players that have just been knighted, if you permit that expression, as member of the England national team. And of course, there's Gareth Southgate. How important is it, the manager at a World Cup level? He was always iffy in people's belief that he is the man for the right job. If you remember, if you're brand new to the World Cup and don't know the history, Sam Allardyce, yes, Big Sam, was named as the England national team manager. And until this point, he's the most successful manager ever. In
undefeated.
England. Undefeated. A winning percentage of 100%, 1,000 average. But then a video in Singapore where he's selling his influence to whoever wants to hear it, saying, look, I can give you information about anything. I can give you blah, blah, I can give you blah, blah, blah. And he lost his job, and they had to find a replacement quickly. Gareth Southgate was the man named with the interim tag, and eventually they took that interim tag out. Will it matter? Does it matter that it's Gareth Southgate and not necessarily the same amount of experience at a World Cup level than you would want as manager of England?
We are in a time in history where they hold the managers up on a level that I'm not entirely sure that they deserve, that they hold. I mean, we talk about, you know, the special one, we talk about Pep, we talk about all these guys, and we think that they're, you know, they're bigger than life. I'm not sure the manager matters that much, and maybe that's a bad take by me, or is it a good take? I don't know. I'm not sure Gareth Southgate matters a whole lot other than selecting the squad for this England team. Once the game kicks off, it's really about the athletes on the field, and I'm not too sure that it matters. So maybe Southgate, because he's so unfancied, is the best person to be leading a team. That there are no teams in this world that I can think of that have as much pressure on them that are where England is as England. I mean, no one else is expected to win the World Cup when they're really the 18th best team in the world, but England is. And so maybe an unfancied manager is the right person to lead them.
It's a good way to look at it. And it's interesting. Let's move to Belgium for a second. We've been talking and hyping Belgium up for a few weeks. Belgium, a squad with a high ceiling. Why? Because one of the difference makers in a tournament like the World Cup is your skills player, your top players, your heavy hitters, your superstars. And Belgium's got a few of those. Eden Hazard, for instance, is a game changer. Top five best players in the world in any given day, any given conversation. Top two, maybe not. Top three, maybe not. But top five, absolutely. So having a top five players in your team and having a Kevin De Bruyne, again, another top five player in the world of midfield players especially, you do have yourself with a potential of a lot of greatness with Belgium. And, of course, the Canadian fans, Montreal Impact fans, MLS fans, you might have a player playing for Belgium if Vincent Kompany doesn't recover from his injury in time until next week. Laurent Simon is number 24. Laurent Simon is, like the Belgians say, the Joker. He's a Joker, and he played 90 minutes two nights ago in a win, in a friendly, and he prepares himself now to maybe go to the World Cup. He'll go back to see the love of his life in L.A., but maybe he's going to make the squad. He's number 24 right now. He's on the bubble. He's on the cusp. Will someone else get injured? That's the question, but interesting stories for Belgium.
Well, you know, Vincent Kompany has injury concerns, so it's a day that ends in Y, right? Like, I mean, yeah, someone might as well book his flight at this point because the company's not going to recover because he's always hurt. He's always hurt. This is my bitter blue coming out right now, which I don't really have the right to be bitter because Manchester City had 100 points this year. But at any rate, no, Belgium is a fascinating team. 100 points. So let's repeat that again. 100 points. Anyway, Belgium's a fascinating team because there is so much talent there. And I'm not sure people are ready to completely buy into the idea that they could win the World Cup, but I'm going to say it right now. They could win the World Cup. They are that good. they may be not as deep as the as a France out there, as a Germany out there, but no one is in this world. But their starting 11 is as talented, as immensely talented as any of the top countries in this world. And if they get the right roles, if they get the right bounces, and that's the key. No, you know, ultimately the winner of the World Cup gets a little bit of luck around the way. I mean, France or Italy doesn't win in 2006 unless Zidane decides to lose his mind in stoppage time, right?
And Trezeguet hit the bar. Like, never mind Zidane. We always forget about Trezeguet not being able to shoot a damn penalty correctly and hit the damn bar.
There you go. So, and for some, Italy won a penalty shootout in the World Cup. But at any rate, no, yeah, you got to have a little bit of luck. So this is what it comes down to. It's not a bad shout if you're going to pick a country that's never won this thing before. It's not a bad shout to say Belgium because look at the talent. It's insane. Hazard and De Bruyne, right there. Two guys that are otherworldly in their talents, are both on the same team. Incredible. Incredible team.
Yep, incredible team. And look, it was close for both of them to play together with the same team. But apparently, Chelsea thought Kevin De Bruyne wasn't good enough. And yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know you're happy. Wolfsburg was happy, but you're really happy. City's really happy that Chelsea can't really assess talent correctly. Hi, Salah. Hi, Mohamed. How are you? You were here before, too. Oh, man. This is becoming a bummer of a show. All right, let's continue. On Group G, Panama, first World Cup in their history, thanks to Roman Torres of the Seattle Sounders scoring late in their last qualification game. Panama books their tickets to not a Van Halen concert, but to the World Cup.
I know that the majority of our listeners are American, so with apologies, that day of qualifying was one of the most insane experiences I've had watching this sport in my life. It was so much was going on.
I was texting you between watching it on my phone. I was like, Dwayne, wait, U.S. are out, U.S. are out. This is insane.
And look, a lot of Americans out there, they want to burn the whole thing down, and I get that. But really, the amount of things that had to go just perfectly for it to fall the way it did was mental. It would never happen again. I mean, the U.S. is absolutely one of the top three teams in this federation, top four teams in this federation for sure. But yeah, Panama got it. And look,
that goal from TNT. Remember that goal from 30 yards from TNT? That actually started the whole sequence of things needed to happen for Panama to get right in front of the U.S. That was insane.
I believe that we will lose. The game will never happen again. It was like a perfect circumstance. And when they were actually out, there was a moment. Again, apology, American listeners. There was a moment that I was just staring in disbelief at my screen going, oh, my God, is this real?
What just happened? Like, someone is going to raise a yellow card or whistle. Be like, no, we need to retake it. No, we need to play more 10 more minutes so the U.S. scores or something. Nope, it happened. But anyways, Panama makes it in. Any chance they win a game? Not against
Tunisia.
Yeah, maybe Tunisia. But the interesting part is the way this group is settled, you're not facing a Belgium or England late in the round as a Panama or Tunisia when they don't have anything to play for. And that's a danger for both those two teams is we're playing best two teams first and then we're playing each other. So it's a no-win situation. And I believe Panama's only goal will be to score any.
Well, yeah, it could be a dead rubber for sure. The game that's on the 28th, the final game of the group stage. Obviously, everyone will be watching because they both kick off at the same time. Everyone will probably be watching England-Belgium, but you know, yeah, is there a chance to get a point in this thing? Of course there is. TNT got a point against England, coincidentally. So we'll see. Look, I think that the world right now of football is such that there aren't really minnows anymore. Minnows are not going to win the thing, but they can take down any great team on any given day. Can Panama win this group? No. Can Panama qualify to this group? Highly unlikely. Can Panama get a point? For sure. So good for them, and I'm happy to see them there, and I will be you know, I do put Team CONCACAF's hat on during the World Cup and will cheer for them a little bit, but it's not a great draw for them in terms of any possibility of getting out. But I do think that they can certainly, certainly they can be there not just to make up the numbers.
It's easier to put the CONCACAF hat when Honduras is not there. It's a lot easier. It's like, yeah, Honduras still hurts, you know.
Yeah, it's not their fault they beat us 8-1. But at any rate,
it's not their fault we're terrible at soccer. And we're talking about the infamous game, of course. If you don't know, if you're just discovering us again, subscribe. But Canada lost, what was it, 2013? Was it 2014, 2013? Long time ago. long time ago in a soccer pitch far, far away, San Pedro Sula, Canada lost 8-1 in a game where they needed to draw to make it to the Hex, which is the last round of qualification for our confederation, which, sadly, we haven't been since long, long time ago.
98, 97 was the last time they were in the Hex. But, yeah, my favorite, quote-unquote, favorite memory of that day was now the communications director for the Ontario Soccer Association, my then podcast partner, Ben Ryacroft, picking his pint of beer up and whipping it against the wall at 4-0. So there you go. That was how that day was. I've never been in a pub as quiet that was full as that day. Oh my God.
I can imagine the reactions. Sticking. Not one word.
Everyone just say something. And the funny thing is,
do we walk out?
Everyone stayed the entire game. Everyone stayed for 8-1. Like, I don't know why we stayed, because
bunch
we wanted
of masochists.
To.
Bunch of wanting to get hurt, loving it. Yeah, that's us. That's Canada.
Well, at one point, Daniel Squiz was in the corner, like, you know, weeping, basically. Like, no offense, Daniel, if you're listening, but yeah, it was a very bad day, very very bad day.
I have the image of Patrice Bernier on the bench, shaking his head, not being able to get on the pitch, and be like, "What did I just witness here?" Oh, Ian Hume, the only good positive story.
Yeah.
He scored a freaking goal. Oh, we love you, Ian Hume. Hope you're having fun in India.
He's like one of their best players. It's a great story. He's still playing. I think he should be on the national team still. But anyway, Rudy Schuller wrote an article. We should have Rudy on to talk about this in the next few days about what his lineup would be if Canada had made the World Cup. He concluded blue in it, which made me just sad.
I had that conversation last night with, I'm not going to say names, but with people that know blue very, very well personally. Like, yeah, that ship has sailed. But we'll see. We'll see. A ship can always be called back to port if you're awarded the World Cup in 2026.
It's ultimately what it's going to come down to. It's sad because, anyway. I see, the thing about Canada, I can't believe we're talking about Canada right now. The thing about Canada is that they do just enough. There's just enough hope out there that you delude yourself into believing that maybe they could be okay, which is kind of the same thing as England on a different scale.
Yeah.
England deludes yourself to believing they can win. Canada deludes yourself in believing
we can make it there.
Yeah.
By the way, we'll know that next Wednesday. June 13 is the day that the vote takes place, and we know where the 2026 World Cup will happen, either United 2026, Canada, United States, and Mexico, or Morocco. But as always, you can follow Dwayne on Twitter. Sorry, Dwayne, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, make sure your passport's ready for 2026. I'm just for most of our listeners. Anyway, go ahead.
Yep, exactly. And if you're like me, just go once every 10 years and then you're good. You don't have to remember to do your passport outside of once every 10 years. And as always, you can follow Dwayne on Twitter at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Laramie. We'll be back tomorrow with Group H and more news, more World Cup talk, more soccer talk. As always, we go live during the 2018 FIFA Russia World Cup, 10 minutes after the first game of the day during the group stage. And you can find all our shows on any podcatchers out there. Just look for World Cup Today or Soccer Today or Sports Podcast Network. I can't speak now, so I'm going to say goodbye. And as always, until tomorrow, have a great soccer. Не уезжай, ты можешь.